a police department is like a crew. It does whatever it wants to do. The police department, we're like a crew. We do whatever we want to do. The police department, it's like a crew. It does whatever it wants to do. The police department, it's like a crew.
Welcome back to the Black Is Break with yours truly, Casey Lehman. We have a beautiful roundtable in the house tonight. Tonight's guests are Chris, Leisha, Carmen, Tash, John, Paul, possibly Shelby, possibly Jamie. We have a couple of spectators in the house. And tonight's topic is Ferguson. Really not too much else to talk about right now. I mean, there's tons of other things happening I guess we could talk about, but at the forefront of all our minds, because our family has not had a chance to debrief about this situation, is what is happening right now in Ferguson. I'll be honest and say this. I've been really quiet about this situation on social media and just in general. And I've been very protective about the amount of information that I choose to take in. And it's clear, it's just straight up because I am pregnant. So I'm already emotional. I was crying at Ice Cube, It Was a Good Day the other day, because that song just brought something out of me. I was happy for Cube that day. And it made me think about Ferguson and how much stuff black people are going through. But I've been real protective of not taking in too much of what the media is putting out there. Half of it, half the reason being, I don't trust every single thing that's being filtered to us. I don't trust that the reports are always accurate. There's a whole lot of independent media that's happening, and anybody that's on Twitter, from what I understand, is getting a true view of what's really happening versus if you're dependent on mainstream news outlets to get your information. I will say this, of course, is not the first time we've seen this situation. This is not the first time we've seen this situation happen this year. Not the first time we've seen the situation happen this month. There's been a few other situations to pop up immediately after, even here in our beloved Los Angeles with the young brother Ezell Ford. And the interesting thing is when I watch, when I do watch the footage of Ferguson, I am immediately taken back to 1992 and our Los Angeles riots and what it felt like to live in a police state. Now, I don't know where everybody was at that time, but I know my family and I lived on 80th in Vermont, which was right in the midst of everything that was happening, because I think y'all have heard me say this before. When I got off my bus after that verdict was read, there was a bomb fire in the middle of the street. And by that night, all of Vermont Avenue was on fire and there were ashes all over our front lawn. And within a couple of days, there were SWAT teams in the neighborhood. We had a curfew, had to be in by 6 o'clock. And it was a crazy way to live. And I remember it being a definite mind-blowing experience for a 14-year-old girl at the time. I don't even think I understood the gravity of what was happening at the time. But for those people who are in Ferguson right now, who are in St. Louis right now, dealing with that situation, I think I speak for most of us native Los Angeles folks. We get what you're feeling right now. We understand what you're feeling right now. I think we side with you in regards to taking to the streets at your frustration of seeing something so unjust happen. And we can talk, and I'm definitely going to open up the table for you all to say everything that you feel. But regardless of what we want to accuse Mike Brown of doing or not doing, there's no good explanation for anybody's child's body to be laying in the street for hours. There is just no justification for that. There's no justification for an unarmed person to be murdered by the police. There's no justification for anybody to feel fear when we're around police. I don't think that's what the purpose is. I don't think that's the purpose they are supposed to serve. And I think when the people begin to fear those that are supposed to protect them, we definitely have a problem. I would venture to say, I think what needs to come back, and we can go back and forth about this, is that the people need to police the community a little bit stronger. We need to depend upon each other to take care of what's happening within our communities and in our neighborhoods. I think if we have a tighter rein on that, we don't necessarily have to depend so much upon the police when it comes to what's happening in our streets. But that aside, the way police are trained, that entire situation needs to be revamped. It's worse than our education system, because if you're being taught to shoot to kill, we have a problem. We definitely have a problem. And the thing that I have found interesting is that over the last few weeks, there have been many people reporting how this is not just happening to us, although I do think it's happening to us in disproportionate numbers, but it's just happening. And so with that, I'm going to step back and I'm going to let you all have at it. Ferguson. Oh, real quick. For anybody who is into the podcast world, I need you all to check out a podcast that is happening right now in St. Louis with the brothers from the Straight Outta Low Cash podcast with Daryl Frierson. They did, a wonderful show when this all first happened. And it was interesting because they are there. They are there. And I think it's nothing like hearing the people who actually live within the community, who frequent the places that are being mentioned and shown on the news, who know some of the parties involved, speak to what's actually happening. It doesn't get more true than that. So check out the Straight Outta Low Cash podcast. We will have a link on the website to their show. But family, Ferguson.
All right. Well, this is Chris. I'll jump it off. To go from a kid that, you know, was basically excessive force was used on him. Just excuse, well, he stole. I'm like, okay, so he stole a damn blunt from a store, which it's questionable because, you know, they always keep them things behind the counter. So somehow he got behind the counter and stole this. And so that means it's okay to put 6+ shots in him because he stole something that was like $1.50, you know, which is on some bullshit. I appreciate what they were doing down there because you're peacefully protesting and all of a sudden cops come out in riot gear, which is going to make the protesters feel some kind of way like, okay, they're about to step up and do some things down here because they're not liking what we're doing. And the reaction that they've Ferguson PD, which has been incompetent from jump doing all this. I mean, it's working. I would say for them, you know, keep doing what you're doing because clearly it's a problem. They can't handle it. It's getting to them. You know, hearing about having sniper rifles pointed at you, I can't imagine that. I give hella props to all those who are out there protesting with guns in your face. Keep doing what you're doing. And at this point, just, you know, we got to change some things.
Yeah, this is Tash. I completely agree with you, Chris and Kim. I have a friend who wrote on Facebook, Twitter, social media, like, be very wary of the person who will espouse the right to bear arms, but will try to bury someone else's right to assembly. And it seems as if that person in this instance is okay with someone's right to bear arms, especially when it's, you know, like, you know, people who are ragtag militias. I think Rachel Maddow really laid out how the hypocrisy and the support from our white brothers and sisters when it came to the guy, the rancher in Nevada who was, you know, like grazing on federal lands. And, you know, all these militias came out to support him and say, hey, you know, he has a right to be here. And these are people with like assault rifles ready to attack federal agents and who had like national media and in some pockets of our family support, like for their stand. But when people just want to protest on the streets, and for the most part, peacefully. There are, I'm not going to deny or apologize for the one or two or ten out of thousands of people who do resort to throwing something or lighting something on fire. You know, very clear, Al Sharpton, you know, laid it out like you are not honoring Mike Brown's legacy if you resort to violence and exercising your right to assembly. But for the most part, it's been a peaceful, if not passionate and heated, protest. Mm-hmm. And that is a signature of American rights, is the ability to just take to the streets and protest. And that, you know, people, I guess what most disturbs me, and this is the most disturbing with, I have actual white family and white folks who I consider to be family, and how silent they go on social media. And I know, you know, social media is geared so that whoever's the most active comes in my news feed. But in times like this, in times like the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, I go to social media to see, like, yo, okay, is my white family speaking up for this? Like, or are they just, like, mute? And I am just always so very aggravated because we come from a social justice family, whether it be social justice from a Christian standpoint or just from a civil rights standpoint. And just how, like, as if somehow these issues don't affect them, just always just, like, really lays heavy on my heart. And I don't think there's anything, especially in it, when the conflict is acute and rife with tension, I don't think now is the moment to address, like, yo, how come you quiet? And I once did call out a family member on something, like, and these are, ironically, these are like family members who live in, like, rural Ohio or rural Oregon. And the issue, I might have, like, you know, tagged them in something, be like, hey, what are the folks? Oh, you know, when they were suppressing votes in Ohio, I was like, what are the people in the streets saying about this? And, like, they didn't reply to any of my posts. Anyhow, I'll stop rambling. I just that's what always weighs heavy on my heart in times like this.
I agree. I think what's been the most disheartening for me is the response in general, and by white people and black people, because I've seen, and I was talking earlier on Facebook, I'm very fortunate that my feed is very like-minded people. Even my white friends, they're very, like, liberal and Bay Area, and a lot of them are comfortable commenting. But I definitely have family that wouldn't probably go near the issue. And, but I see my friends' friends' comments, and I'm just shocked at the things that I've seen. And I mean, and I feel like it takes a lot to shock me, but, like, black people that are literally harping on the supposed shoplifting, that's what I'm going to call it, and also on the whole black on black crime thing. I don't understand these responses. Like, I just don't get it. Like, the fact that a black person would actually put out there, well, what about the black people killing each other? Well, what about that? These are police killing people. That's a whole different topic. Like, I don't even see the relevance whatsoever between those two things. Like, we're not supposed to have crimes committed against us by the people that are supposed to protect you from crime. That's the whole point. Of course citizens commit crimes against each other. That's life, you know? So I'm just baffled that these are, like, people that suffer from these things that are coming back with these, and they don't realize that, or maybe they do realize, it sounds like excuses and justifications, and I don't understand. Like, I just am so just, and I'm like, when you're that far gone from seeing the situation for what it is, it just makes me feel very hopeless. It really does. Cause I'm like, we basically can work with, like, half the population. That's what we have to work with. The other half, I can't deal with. I mean, they're in another place. So that's just what I feel.
Hey, my name is Paul. I guess I totally agree with how you, I guess, your perspective. When I heard about this, I just felt almost the way I did when Trayvon Martin's verdict came out. Mm-hmm. I guess I went from like angry to confused to just really, really sad, not only at the greater white community, but also this country. I just feel like we're treated as second-class citizens. Even though we can vote, we have a black president, I still feel that we're not really respected, or our humanity is not really affirmed as people. You know, when people say, like you say, you know, anytime a black male is killed, they justify it with saying, well, black people kill black people. But anytime a white person kills another white person, they'll say, well, white people kill white people. Or even like now, like there was a gentleman who killed those people in Colorado in like the movie theater. But when they went to the news, they had pictures of him in like a tuxedo. But with Trayvon Martin, they had him, you know, allegedly throwing up gang signs or like smoking marijuana, or Mike Brown, kind of the same thing. It's like the perception that they show of us as black people or black males is that we're violent, you know, we're angry, and as a result, therefore, you can kill us. Like, we're animals in the street. And it just, I don't know, it's just really, really scary, you know, as opposed to, like, bringing it to trial or at least trying to figure out what happened or why it happened. It's just like, no, he robbed a store. But what's interesting with, you know, they said a strong-arm robbery in the store after it occurred, the police chief, I think a week later after the shooting, said that the cop wasn't even aware that he was a suspect. And he was stopped because he was allegedly jaywalking, which is not a felony or a violent crime. You're just, you know, blocking the street. And apparently there was a verbal altercation, because I doubt he said, hey, young man, you're in the middle of the street. You know, can you move? I don't want to hit you with my car. I guarantee he cursed him out, and Mike Brown and his friend probably said something in response, because I know I would have too. And, you know, it just escalated from there. And then, but what's weird is that this simple stop escalated to someone getting shot 6 times, I think 3 in the head and like the rest in the arm. So it's just really weird how a simple conversation can lead to someone's death, and then like a police state and like a whole national outcry. And even with that, I feel like the media is more afraid of not really Mike Brown's death or his life, but more so because this can happen in their communities. The fact that people are like pointing guns and there's tanks and there's tear gas and they're attacking the media, not like, you know, BET, CNN and Al Jazeera, MSNBC and Fox News. Like, we're all affected. And as Americans, you know, our constitutional right to, you know, peaceably assemble, our freedom of speech, like, that's all, you know, being infringed upon. And that's really the threat, you know, in addition to threat to our communities and, you know, our lives. So
on that note, too, I would just say that it's brought up a lot of really good analysis. This whole, his death has been, there's been a treasure trove of analysis. And one of the pieces that I really love, or one of the topics, is the respectability factor. Like, you know, if Mike Brown was, you know, a respectable black person, when you talk about like, yeah, they're on their way to college. Roxane Gay wrote an excellent blog on this about how the same week he died, someone died on a NASCAR track. Mm-hmm. And at no point did they say that, oh, he was an upstanding young man, that he was on his way to college. They didn't find a need to justify like the life because it was a respectable person. The life was just like the life was worthy and justifiable because it was a life, and the murder or the accident, the killing of this person was worth talking about in a very respectful tone. Whereas when a black person is gunned down by police, we always, black folks tend to be, like, want him to be a respectable person because it makes our case better. But I think we should really be embracing the fact that, yeah, so what? I guess if he actually stole a box of cigarillos, it's not worth his life. And the fact that he was unarmed means that someone who's in a position of power, as in, you know, a police officer, should be able to quell any conflict without killing the person. And the life is so much more valuable. And so, I'm tired of, as a black man, having to fall into, you know, respectability politics, and, you know, is my life worthy because I am white friendly, quote unquote. And I think it's really brought up a lot of issues. I mean, the analysis has been amazing. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of great blogs, but I think it's brought up that issue. And really, it's made us think about the police, the current state of how our law enforcement is trained and right. now militarized.
I want to go back to the murder of Eric Garner, because to me, that was a starting point for that analysis, because that was a situation that I think for anybody that could stand to watch the entirety of that video was just mind blowing. And I think what I saw, my perception as a black woman, was straight up just fear of a big black man, straight up fear of why can we not subdue and control this big black man? Or why is he not compliant in doing exactly what we're telling him to do? And that fear required excessive force, multiple people, and eventually this man saying, I cannot breathe, and then his death. You know, that blew my mind, you know, and it just, I feel like we're in a situation right now where it's just open season on black people. And what pisses me off is if I'm talking about my diverse population of friends, for the most part, those that don't, I guess there are some people, somebody wrote an article and I can't remember who, it was a young white woman, and she was saying part of the reason why she feels like a lot of white people are silent right now is because they don't know what to say. They don't feel like they're racist. They don't know if by saying something they'll fuel the fire or say something that'll accidentally piss people off. So they choose to just stay mute in the situation because they don't really know exactly what to say. It doesn't mean that they don't sympathize, but they are just clueless as to how to speak on this situation. Because the ones who are ignorant are talking all day long. They have so much to say. Yeah. They have so much to say. Right. Right. They have so much to say. Right. Exactly.
And didn't it's he attack just, the cop?
Yeah. And I hate the fact that we as a people have to constantly hear the commentary about why we play victim and why do we feel like we always have, I hate that we always feel like we have to explain ourselves and that when we make these points, people don't believe us.
Like as if,
right.
Like, who put the card in the deck?
Right. Right. As if we make this stuff up, as if these people aren't our neighbors and relatives and members of our community. Like we're just pulling deaths and murders out of our ass and just saying, boom, this is happening. That bothers me more than anything, you know, and it's not just the brethren. Women are attacked hardcore. That sister that was on the freeway and was getting punched out by highway patrol. Oh my God. Like that situation was so foolish.
She wasn't the first one.
Is real.
It's wow. So real. It's so real. And I think the conversation, and the thing is, I know that all cops aren't bad people, but there is but
I hate that comment.
No.
I hate that comment that all cops aren't bad because it's, but it's, no. Let me, its intention is good.
Right. But let
it's
me,
a way of.
Yeah. Let me land the point. Let me land the point, though. It's a gross generalization to believe that any idea about one entire group of people. You know what I'm saying? But there is definitely, just like there is a disproportionate number of us that are under attack, there's a disproportionate number of them that are not stable for this position. Otherwise, this would not be happening on such a consistent basis.
Also, they have more. I mean, I just grew up in a house where the more responsibility and power you had, the more trouble you actually got in if some shit went down and shit went wrong.
Agreed.
And so you were held to a higher level of accountability. And so there wasn't a protection ring against you because you put your life on the line. It's like, no, putting your life on the line, it also means that you put your life on the line, but because you're so fastidious about making sure you follow the rule of law, that you you have to still follow the rule of law. Like, I was at Chick-fil-A. Yes, I eat at Chick-fil-A, people. And I was at Chick-fil-A, and it bothered me to see cops, like, double parked or parked in the red to be in line with me at Chick-fil-A. And I was just like, this is the type of irritation.
Eating for free.
Even if they weren't eating for free, yeah. But this is the type of thing where, like, why don't you have to follow the law?
Exactly.
It's like, if it matters, if there's a reason why that's a red zone for safety or something, then you should follow. And an exception shouldn't be made, especially in heightened national passions against, you know, police in a black neighborhood. Right. You should be very mindful of the fact that we are watching the fact that you think, oh, I'm immune to the law. I can park wherever I want.
Right.
That just bothered me. Sorry.
No, it's
right. But the police thing, and that's the thing, what do we do? So that was my thought when I first saw all of this. Like, there's something has to fundamentally change with the way police go in and approach things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're trained. They're supposed to be trained to, they come into hostile situations. Right. No one calls the police when it's just a regular day, right? Mm-hmm. So they, I feel like the training, something happened. It's, there was some sort of thing in all across, because we've seen this from Oakland to New York, where the police go into these situations and they are on the immediate defense. They've already identified who's guilty and they've taken the law in their own hands.
Is it fair?
And that's not right. And so I don't know what that training looks like. They have to, but they go in as a sounding board, right? If two people are arguing and one person calls the police, they expect the police to help them do something. So in Oscar Grant's case, if he was having an issue with someone, a Mexican or whoever, don't automatically, just because you're Mexican, come in and say, okay, this is the I'm on the Mexican side. Like, you can't make that assumption. So I don't know what type of training they come with. And everybody comes with our own prejudices. We come with our own opinions, with our jobs and everything. But I feel like there should be something trained or something. And I don't know how it can be done, because we do come with all of our lives and 30 plus years of whatever when we go into our jobs. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's just something that's missing from police training and understanding that they just don't care. And they're not made to be held accountable. So in these situations where they work, in this situation, Mike Brown's situation, he's clearly wrong, regardless of if that boy stole one cigarillo, if you didn't know if he was jaywalking, he didn't deserve to get shot six times. So you know you're wrong. Well, you're on
out, right?
Exactly. He didn't deserve to get shot, let alone killed.
From the back.
Exactly. So now you're on administrative leave. Who wouldn't like to be on administrative leave?
Paid leave.
Okay. I love that.
Right.
So you can just chill. And why is that though? Why is that the punishment for him?
Right.
Right? So what does he get? So what are we telling him for the next time that this happens to him?
Yeah.
That there could be no different. I mean, why wouldn't he do this for the next time?
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, the thing that really killed me when the coroner came out and was talking about the shots that he took, because there were six, I think it was only one to the head. The head shot is the problem. Because
the top of the head.
And he said all the other shots were survivable, but the one to the head was the one that killed him.
Well, so he said that, but there was only one to his eye, the one like right here.
Okay.
So, I mean,
maybe he really could have survived it, but I guess just in looking at where they hit internally, my thing is, why are you shooting anywhere above the neck at all? If the point is just to disable somebody so that you can apprehend them, you have no need to shoot them above the head.
But that wasn't, I don't think that
point anymore.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
They shoot to kill.
You seen with Twitter and all that, where they put out all these like last one, with all these white people who have committed these crimes with weapons, they all are
apprehended.
Yeah, they're apprehended. Mm-hmm. You know, like, nobody's shooting them, but for some reason these black people who are unarmed, they get bullets. I mean, I haven't heard the one out here where, like, I don't know when this was, not that long ago, where it was a kid who got shot in the cop car. And he was cuffed, and you're like, really?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And then the video they put out that happened of the guy that was shot in St. Louis after, they shot him and then cuffed him.
Oh, the mentally ill man?
Yeah.
They rolled him over and then cuffed him.
Yeah. How does that work?
I actually, and here, I'm expressing all my, like, disgruntled attitude about law enforcement from a person who my friends, like, in playing a game, like, who's most likely to talk their way out of a ticket? Like, I'm the person who people will vote for that. And I really come from, like, the Jack Nicholson school of thought, which he says, like, you can get away with whatever you want, but when you see a cop, be very respectful and, like, just play the game. And I do believe that, one, black folk, black youth need to be taught to play that game, to be respectful and to be like, yes, sir, and to be like, yo, I'm not a threat. Like, I don't mind people who play that game. I think, of course, it's harder to play that game when you are under attack by law enforcement in your city. So that's not an option. But for me, even though I come from that perspective, like all cops aren't bad. I think that's a blanket way of acknowledging that there's some good people out there. But I think we should start off with all training of police officers is insufficient. Mm-hmm. It's insufficient because I do understand and I get it where they are taught to defend themselves at all costs. Like if the difference is between you getting shot and you shooting and kill somebody, shoot and kill that person. Because at sometimes it is very, you know, life is on the line. It's that acute and you have the badge behind you. But let's remember that just having a badge behind you in the history of the United States is actually sometimes, oftentimes was a cause for you to justifiably lynch black people. Mm-hmm. Like in the Oklahoma city riots, you know, when they had those horrible race riots, they were deputizing white folks so that they could go out and kill black people and wouldn't be, you know, charged for murder. So I think we really need to have a national discussion on what the police means and the antagonistic, what the police means to the black community and the antagonistic approach police officers had often had.
This is John Wood. For most people in the inner city, when we talk about our relationships with the police department, we tend to look at the police, and I think justifiably so very often, as in our case, not an institution or an organization that is there to protect and serve, but rather an organization that is actually there as an occupying force. And I think that's where a lot of the trouble here begins. I look at the whole Ferguson thing on a couple of levels. There's the case itself. It's very difficult for me to see how it is that the shooting could have been justified. And I really try and take a scalpel to these kind of things because I don't like to outrun the facts. The young man was shot 6 times. There are slight contradictions in the eyewitness testimony. One person says that he was shot while putting his hands up. Another says that he was shot in the back. But the autopsy that has been released seems to indicate that there was some physical distance between the officer and Mr. Brown, making it a little difficult to understand how it was Mr. Brown was reaching for the officer's gun. In any event, why it was necessary to shoot him 6 times to prevent him from doing so. The police report itself was heavily redacted, and the police still haven't really made public all the details of the autopsy. That seems to suggest to me that there's probably a bit of a guilty conscience or something that may be deliberately obscured on the part of the police department in Ferguson, because otherwise I don't see why they wouldn't be more forthcoming with the details of the investigation, the initial report that has been made. And so all of these things conspire, I think, to justify people's outrage. But you know, Tash, you made the point about police officers, the way they've historically treated us, the way they've historically treated black people in many cases, so many cases, and the badge being a justification for it. Police officers, unfortunately, in black communities, are not a part of the community very often, whereas in other neighborhoods they are. And that's a fundamental difference. In Ferguson, you have a police, from what I understand, you have a police force of about 53 officers, 3 of whom are African-American. And, of course, now that you have civil unrest, they've appointed an African-American police captain, a black police captain, to try and subdue that. It's sort of a PR move, I suppose. No disrespect to the officers' credentials, but you can sort of see what that is about. You know, I lived in the Jordan Downs Projects in Watts for a little while, and that's where my wife is from. Kim, you made the point that there are some good police officers. I understand that sounds like a patronizing statement, Tash, but it is. I did notice that there are officers who understand how to try and insert themselves into the community. That's what a good police officer does. There are a few cops who, if you go around the Jordan Downs and you say the name of the officer, people around the neighborhood know and they like this particular officer because they know this officer makes an effort to try and understand people. But then there's the big swath of them who it's just, you know, officer so-and-so, don't mess with him because he's not going to give you a fair shake necessarily. That's the gap that needs to be bridged. And what really pains me is when we talk about the things that our, you know, white brothers and sisters tend not to understand. And again, that's a very general term, white brothers and sisters. But, you know, the thing that really hurts me is that even if somehow, contrary to my particular understanding, because it's difficult for me to see it, but even if somehow you come away from all the facts laid on the table thinking that maybe there was some way this could be justified as self-defense, even if you think that, it breaks my heart to think that people would still not see this as the tragedy that it is, and especially to justify not seeing it so on the basis of the fact that this young man robbed a liquor store earlier. Yeah, I mean, robbed a liquor store, stole a pack of cigarettes, maybe pushed a clerk. That's not a good thing, of course. But even if you, it goes to what you said about respectability politics, even if the young man was troubled, even if the young man had things in his past, in his history, things that he had done that day that were not angelic, you know, this is a young man who will never have the chance to turn his life around because of what happened to him, you know. And I know some of the most beautiful and wonderful people in my life, in my family, my friends, are people who have dark marks on their past, people who've done things way worse than, you know, shoplift at a liquor store, who turned their lives around because they had an opportunity. That opportunity was not taken from them, you know. And so that's the outrage for me, not just on the basis of the merits of the case itself. Again, I'm highly skeptical of police narrative here, but of the fact that we can't unite in recognizing the fact that, you know, regardless of the young man's history, this is a tragedy. And we should all be united in grief over that, because it just explodes all of the frustration and turmoil that we have, as black people, have experienced for so long. The justification, the outrage is justified. But I do think that we need to look forward in a positive sort of way and figure out how we can build constructively on it. And that is always the challenge.
You make a really good point in regard to the relationship between the police and the community, because we get to see so many lovely cinematic images of those police that walk the beat and know the people in the community and, hey, Ms. Johnson, and hey, Mr. Such and Such. And I don't think any of us in the city of Los Angeles have that relationship. I mean, I haven't seen a policeman walk down an actual residential street. Not never.
Well, we don't walk in L.A.
Right. But even driving past, and the thing that pains me, and I've said this to Chris, you know, we have a six-year-old who at this point sees the world from a very idyllic perspective. So cops, firemen, construction people, if we're taking him to school in the morning, he's just waving to everybody, because for them, they're people who just work. And I'll say to him, I said, honey, you don't have to wave to everybody. He said, but mommy, you know, they were just working people. It's the police. And in his mind, these are people who are there to do a good thing. And I hate the fact that one day he is going to have to learn you have to watch your relationship with them at this point. You know what I mean? And it's not, at 6 years old, he's actually not that far off to needing to understand that. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. A conversation I had with a cousin of mine who's in Detroit. She ain't never leaving Detroit. And I always say, you know, for me, sometimes the idea of black people getting global and thinking of other places, I always feel like we should all have a secondary home. She's like, well, I ain't going nowhere. I ain't leaving my country. But she was like, 20 years ago, Time Magazine put out a article or a cover story about the browning of America. She said, and here we are. And then recently that picture is circulated of what the typical American is going to look like in 2050. It's a brown skinned girl with blue eyes and sandy colored hair. She said, what we're seeing right now is a last ditch effort by people who are scared as hell because their white majority is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. We live in a world that's much more diverse, with twice or 10 times as many interracial relationships than this world has ever seen. And that trend is not stopping. In fact, it's not even a trend. It is just what's happening. People are laying that down in regards to relationships that they are building. And so her argument, And I somehow am drawing a parallel, John, with what you said about looking at this in a positive manner. And maybe it's that hopeful piece, Leisha, that I want to hold on to, is that we are coming up with a generation that is not so much colorblind, but not letting race be an issue in regard to how they communicate and get down with one another. And if that is the case, this would be a last ditch effort to try to hold on to some sort of, I don't know, white dominance, white supremacy.
Well, for me, it's not even about the race thing is acute now because of Ferguson and the history that St. Louis has had with the race relations that they've had between the cops and the black community,
right.
The poor race relations. But to me, when I think of a police force, I always have this like background, like in the back of my head, a fear of corruption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, you know, the ability to like, okay, let's get, you know, training day. Let's get our story stored. Okay, you walk in the door, somebody like to cover their tracks.
Right.
I mean, and the same thing that people do in, you know, in an office, like, okay, you know, let's not get sued here. What happened? Yeah, like, okay, and then how do we arrive at this decision to deny this claim? You know, like,
right, right.
And so I'm just, you know, for me, you're right. The with looking to the future, I do think that the race aspect will dwindle. But for some reason, I think there is the what do they call it? The protective blue shield or the protective ring and the cops unions. Like, you know, you can't mess with a cops pension fund. But mm-hmm. for some reason, teachers aren't as important as cops.
Right.
Like, or firefighters aren't as important as cops. Like. It's just the amount of power and influence they have, especially because we live in a very fearful country where we have to protect ourselves from the other with our gun or from black people or from the Mexicans coming across the border or the terrorist. Like, police officers are afforded, or police forces are afforded a certain status, which if they like stood up to it and like really were upstanding in a immaculate way, I'd bow down and give them that status. And I do when I get pulled over. I'm just like, oh yeah, hey, sorry, officer. Can I put my seatbelt on now? I appreciate it. Thank you. You know, but I'm just very fearful that the corruption, the systematic corruption.
No,
not
right.
Not to say that it's a given that they're corrupt, but that's my main fear.
No, you're right.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you're thinking. On Twitter at Black Is Online, on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, email us at kc@blackisonline.com. Hit us up on the hotline at 323-455-4219. And check us out at www.blackisonline.com. Thanks for listening.